you have been around the last few Sundays, then you can tune out what I'm going to say for the next, like, 2.5 minutes. Okay, but because I'm saying the same thing every week, because I want to make sure everybody kind of, if you haven't been here, you get kind of where we're going with the series on Moses. And we're calling it Mosaic because Moses has this fascinating personality. It's kind of like a mosaic, you know, there's just a lot of different facets that come together to make this really cool picture of a great servant leader. But it's just a fun play on words, because mosaic is a totally different root than Moses. It's just a totally two different words. The noun mosaic is a, you know, a work of art. The adjective mosaic is something about Moses. And so, but they're really, you know, so it's just kind of, I'm having fun with that. And so, but we're piecing together this personality of Moses, that his epitaph is the greatest prophet ever in the history of Israel. No prophet has risen in Israel like Moses. No one ever even came close to doing the stuff that he did. He was known as the one person. The Lord would speak face to face with Moses. And that's the best thing image I could come up with, you know. It's like, you know, so, but what would that feel like, you know, to, as one speaks to a friend. And I've been kind of jokingly saying these guys were like poker buddies. You know, I mean, they were just that close in, you know, in their friendship. And Moses had this, I mean, this friendship, you know, he had this influence. And the Bible talks about how Moses would come to God and plead on behalf of the people who were so stubborn. And even though they had seen and experienced the same things as Moses, they just wanted to turn back and not press on and where God was calling them. But God would listen to Moses. And Moses had this weight of influence because of their relationship. And it's just incredible, because as we've seen, Moses' life started off very shaky. Our first Sunday in Mosaic, we saw that he starts off as a murderer, as a fugitive on the run, somebody that just lost his temper, couldn't contain himself, and now was self-exiled to a foreign country. But we looked and we saw that there was this kernel of greatness in Moses, because what caused that holy discontent, that we called it, was a desire to see justice and stand up against oppression. And we see that, and we saw that in some other moments of his life too. And then last Sunday, we kind of looked closely at that incredible experience, you know, when God called Moses at the burning bush. And all Moses, even though he's in the midst of hearing God, and we got this great leader. How did he get that way? Because he starts off so raw and unrefined, and he's just full of excuses. Of why, I mean, he's just, I mean, it was kind of funny. I don't know, I was tickled last Sunday when we were kind of really looking through the story, and all the ways Moses was just sidestepping God, and just, in, you know, he's like, maybe if I ask, please, you know, and he just, please, just send somebody else, and he says, I'm just not your guy, I can't do this, there's no way I can even talk to Pharaoh, I just do not have the chops. And finally, God gets him on board by saying, tell you what, I know you've got an older brother that's good with words. In fact, he's on his way here to meet you. And so God invents the Cyrano de Bergerac routine. And so basically, Moses, I'll tell you what to tell Aaron. And you just whisper to Aaron, and Aaron will tell Pharaoh my words. Okay, we'll just work that way. Everybody good with that? Okay, what does it take with these guys, you know? And so, but God finally gets them on board. So now the action moves to Egypt with Pharaoh. So I think we're going to try to cover 6 chapters here. So hold on tight. I'm going to race through some episodes here, because I want you to see an incredible transformation that goes on in this next section in Moses' experience. So afterward, Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and said, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. Let my people go, so that they may hold a festival to me in the wilderness." Pharaoh said, "Who is the Lord?" This one's not on my radar here. "That I should obey him and let Israel go. I do not know the Lord that you're talking about and will not let Israel go." Then they said, "The God of the Hebrews has met with us. Now let us take a 3-day journey into the wilderness to offer sacrifices to the Lord our God." So that was the little, you know, plan was, it's just going to be a weekend, you know, not long. It's going to be like a, you know, long weekend, we're just going to go off. "Or he may strike us with plagues or with a sword if we don't listen to him." But the king of Egypt said, "Moses and Aaron, why are you taking the people away from the labor? Get back to your work." Then Pharaoh said, "Look, the people of the land are now numerous, and you're stopping them from working. You're causing a bunch of trouble." The same day, Pharaoh gave this order to the slave drivers and overseers in charge of the people. "You are no longer to supply the people with straw for making bricks." We're going to really make these guys feel it. "Let them go and gather their own straw, but require them to make the same number of bricks as before. Don't reduce the quota. They are lazy. That is why they are crying out. Let us go sacrifice to our God. Make the work harder for the people so that they'll keep working and pay no attention to lies." So everything just backfires. How would you feel if God made it very clear to you what he wants to do and he wants to do through you, and you finally got dragged along in the process, and then everyone that you're trying to help out just feels like you have made things worse? And that is exactly the frustration that Moses felt there. It's like, "God, why?" Moses returned to the Lord and said, "Why, Lord, why have you brought trouble on this people? Is this why you sent me? Ever since I went to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has brought trouble on this people, and you have not rescued your people at all. What is the deal?" I mean, that's confusing. Moses is, he's lost. He's frustrated. He's completely, we're not off to a good start here. Is this how things are going to keep going? Okay, but check this out. This is the last time you ever see anything shaky or doubtful or questioning in Moses. About chapter 5, right here. We're going to get to the end of chapter 11 in a few minutes. But what happens, and this is what we want to explore here, is this transformation. How in the world does Moses go from this place of just like totally being lost and confused and has very little confidence in God to never feeling like that ever again? I mean, it's this incredible transformation, just like Isaiah said, from a little cute caterpillar that's on your finger all the way to that transformation, that big, old, cool, gorgeous butterfly that can fly wherever he wants. So let's dive in. It's a funny little, so it's a little pattern that we see. But first of all, here's how things go. Everything's about Aaron. And so then the Lord said to Moses, tell Aaron. You know, it's like everything's about, just like Jan felt like everything was about Marsha. Everything's about Aaron. And so tell Aaron to do this. Tell Aaron to do that. All through these various plagues that we're going to see. Because what happens, and most of you know the story, so I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail, but God says, look, go to Pharaoh and tell him if he doesn't let my people go, I'm going to bring disaster on the land of Egypt. And plague after plague hits the land. There's 10 of them. I thought there might be some kids in here. And so it's kind of a cute way of seeing the river turned to blood in the first one. And then the land was filled with frogs. I know, some people think that'd be fun to have frogs in your house. Other people, not so much. And all sorts of, grasshoppers and insects. Okay, so I don't know what your translation says here for gnats, but in one of the translations it says lice. Ooh. Yeah, I don't know about your families, but we've been down that once or twice, and that is no fun. All the cattle get sick in one. Boils pop out on everybody's skin in another. There's hailstorms, there's locusts, there's total pitch darkness. And then the last one is like really scary. And so, but there's 10 of these awful plagues. But we see this pattern happening throughout the plagues where things, for the most part, Aaron's doing the talking. But it's not until, it's really not until locusts that all of a sudden you start to see Moses piping in a little. And his confidence level starts to rise. And it's no longer him hiding behind his big brother Aaron. And he starts to see God in action. And see that God can really do some things. And it starts to increase his faith and his comfort level. And look at the things he starts saying. Because up until now, he's been silent. He's been letting Aaron, do the staff work, raise his staff. He's been, just communicating the plan to him and letting him doing the talking. Then all of a sudden, Moses says to Pharaoh, when Pharaoh has a change of heart, and Pharaoh would go back and forth, and he would say, okay, I'll let your people go. Just call off all this disaster. But then he would change his mind. And so, but this one time he says, Moses, please, just pray for me. But Moses, listen to the tone in his words. I leave to you the honor of setting the time for me to pray for you and your officials and your people, that you and your houses may be rid of the frogs, except for those that remain in the Nile. Okay, so this was a little earlier on, after the frogs. But all of a sudden, he's being a little sarcastic in here. He's all, tell you what, you get the honor of setting the time. And Pharaoh goes, tomorrow, as soon as you can possibly do it. Another time when Pharaoh, he says, okay, I'll let you go, but just the men, without the women and children. So I know you'll come back. And then another time he goes, I'll let you go, but you can't go too far. In fact, just do your sacrifices here, close by. But Moses doesn't budge. He doesn't let Pharaoh negotiate with him. All of a sudden he has this. Remember he said, I can't talk to Pharaoh. I've got no eloquence. I've got no negotiating skills. And here we see him saying, that would not be right. The sacrifices we offer the Lord our God would be detestable around the Egyptians. And if we offer sacrifices that are detestable in their eyes, will they not stone us? We must take a 3-day journey into the wilderness to offer sacrifices to the Lord our God as he commands us. So we see Moses stepping up into a role that he thought there was no way he could fulfill. What is going on? Another time, later on in the plagues, Moses replied, when I have gone out of the city, I will spread out my hands in prayer to the Lord. The thunder will stop and there will be no more hail. So you may know that the earth is the Lord's And then he throws in this little zinger. But I know that you and your officials still do not fear the Lord God. And so it's just interesting when you take a really close look at the dialogue going on after each plague. You see Moses stepping it up and going head to head with Pharaoh. And now you see, now when we get to the locusts, we see another little change. Up until this time, God would always tell Moses to tell Aaron to stretch out his hand, raise the staff in order to start one of the plagues. And now the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand over Egypt. So by the time we get to plague 8, things have transferred. Moses is now taking more of a lead role. He's been speaking, and now he's taking more action. It's like God's mentoring him and bringing him along at the pace that he can handle and showing him his handiwork and building up a track record in Moses' heart to increase Moses' confidence. You know, right about here, I should have had a picture of Joe Montana and Bill Walsh because everybody's a 49er fan, right? And so, I remember reading about Joe Montana talking about how in his rookie year as a quarterback, he knew because Walsh, the coach, had told him that he was eventually going to be the starting quarterback, but he would only send him in on sure thing situations. And he kind of felt bad for Steve DeBerg, who was the starting quarterback, you know, because Walsh would pull DeBerg and put in Montana when it was like an easy, you know, they had great field position. It was, you know, there's just all the things were gonna work well. It was short yardage to get to a first down. In order to build up Joe's confidence, he's this young quarterback, and he wanted to make sure he came along at the right pace. And it was really interesting how calculated he was. And so we see God, you know, kind of grooming Moses and seeing Moses' confidence level increase as time goes on. Then we get to the last plague. This is where things get a little intense. So Moses said, this is what the Lord says about midnight, because Pharaoh has refused to budge after 9 disasters. About midnight, I will go through Egypt. Every firstborn in Egypt, you know what? From the firstborn son of Pharaoh who sits on the throne to the firstborn son of a female slave who is at her handmill, and all the firstborn cattle as well. There will be loud wailing throughout Egypt, worse than there has ever been or ever will be again. But among the Israelites, and then remember this is Moses speaking, not a dog will bark at any person or animal. Then you will know that the Lord makes a distinction between Egypt and Israel. All these officials of yours will come to me, bowing down before me and saying, go, you and all the people who follow you, and after that I will leave. And then Moses, hot with anger, left Pharaoh. And I love the scene, and I love the way they describe it, because Moses, he's not afraid to show his emotion. He has the strength. Before he shuddered to even try to imagine being in the presence of Pharaoh. Now he's throwing down, you know, these more than a threat. He's giving them the news of what's going to happen, and he's got no fear in his heart whatsoever because he knows he's fully backed by God. And he leaves hot with anger. And so just this passion, remember, this is that nugget that God saw in him that day when he had pulled that slave driver off of that Hebrew slave and knocked him around in order to do something about the oppression his people were feeling. God knew if he could just water that seed, he had somebody that would stand up for his people. And now we really start to see it. But how did it get there? How does he go through that transformation? I mean, we went really fast through several chapters there, but you do see this pattern of Moses all of a sudden taking on more. But why does he do it? I think the answer is he sees what God can do. He sees more and more of what God can do, and God shows up more and more over time. Now, you got to remember, before this, I mean, there's no Bible. Moses has no history with God. The last they ever heard of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Joseph was 400 years before. I mean, that's centuries before. This is all very new. God is showing up. He's revealing himself. And this is what's so great about God's desire to have a friendship with us, is he doesn't expect us to make sense of everything all of a sudden out of nowhere. He says he lets us have the time we need, and he shows up in various ways until it's almost like a spiritual resume gets built up in our life, a track record to where, okay, we've seen God come through on what he said he was going to come through on. We can trust him. Because somewhere in there, between frogs and locusts, Moses started feeling a lot more confident. But it took some time. And it took seeing some things. It took waiting on some things, because it wasn't easy. God never said, okay, there's going to be 10. So just hang out, hang in there until there's 10. I mean, there could have been 20. There could have been, all Moses knew was Pharaoh was saying no every time. And so this wasn't working. But he never sounded like he did before the plague started happening. And he just gets more confident, even though he gets rejected just as harshly every time by Pharaoh. This last time, he just storms out. And what if it didn't take? What if Pharaoh didn't, what if it didn't take on this last plague? I mean, Moses would have just kept going. That was the direction he was driving in. Because God had showed up, and he had a lot. He had seen a lot of God come through on his spiritual resume. So I want to ask you a question today. If you had to write a resume, and most of us have written a resume. When was the last time? Maybe it's been a while. Like Gene, is that the same company for 40 years? Did you ever write? See, you didn't. Probably didn't have to write a resume since that first job out of school with Chevron, and that was it. We were there for and you didn't even have to write one. Just walked in. That's awesome. The best resumes are nice and full, where we show we've got some experience. We've got some wherewithal. We've been around the block a little bit. Have you been around the block with God? And I think, we're all in different places there, but it's a good exercise to build our confidence, to take some time and write down, or at least reflect on, how God has shown up in our life, especially if we're not feeling very confident, and doubts are creeping in. It's nice to go, wait a second, he has been around, and there's no reason he's going to change directions now. Now, if there isn't a lot on that resume, that's okay. It probably just means you haven't been looking very long or very hard, because he's been there. But it's time to start building that resume. And one way to do that is, did everybody get this little promises from God? I thought this was nice. Instead of, since we're talking about these 10 plagues, to kind of counterbalance that with some 10 promises from God to remember. And I love these. And I hope this can be something that reminds you that God is with you and for you, and has said many more promises than this. But this is a nice little top 10 to hold on to. If you're feeling just stressed out and just wiped out, knowing that he's there to give us rest at a very deep level, there to give us strength to answer our questions. He won't fail us, and he will always provide, he will always be there, and always lead and direct our steps. I mean, so many things to hang on to. And so, but it's a great resume builder and resume writer to go down this list and go, well, has God ever answered me? Has God ever answered a prayer for me? Has God ever provided for me? Has God ever given me direction? And if he has, to fill that in. Now, if you're wondering, I don't know if he's, I need that provision. I need that direction. I need that sense that God is for me. To begin, to pick one of these that maybe is missing from your resume and your experience, and start taking God up on his promise to you, and see what happens. Because that's what happened to Moses. He started seeing God show up and fulfilling his promise that he was going to deliver his people. And that emboldened Moses to step up more and more and live and walk in that truth. But what we notice is he didn't start stepping up and feeling that confidence after that last plague when they were on their way out of town. It started happening before. He started living in that truth before it actually happened, because he was confident that it was going to take place at some point. God was going to deliver. And he decided that he could talk and live as if that was going to happen. And it's this incredible butterfly transformation that happens in Moses' heart in this episode that's astounding. I mean, it's practically overnight, but it took some time and it took some experiences. But to go from that insecure and that full of fear to that emboldened and hot with anger inside the Pharaoh's throne room, it's just this amazing transformation from that burning bush to that throne room. This incredible personality. And so God offers us much more than Moses had at that time. Moses didn't have, all he was going on was, some whispers. I mean, we've got an entire canon of scripture. We've got, all these promises and so many more episodes in sacred history to look at and marvel at and go, wow, God, if he can do that, why can't he show up in my life? And so, let's say a little prayer, but I really hope you take some time at some point to reflect on your spiritual resume and your experiences with God. And I hope this is a handy little a little tool to direct that a little bit, but then and then also to build it up more and more. Heavenly Father, thank you that you offer so much to each of us, and I pray that we would all find at least one promise on this list that we're astounded by, that probably sounds too good to be true, that really we would do that, and that we would really start leaning into that promise and praying about it and wondering about it and looking for you to show up in our life to fulfill that promise to us. And not wait till it happens, but to start acting in faith even before that, and to follow in Moses' footsteps of stepping up in confidence, because you're calling us to become someone greater than we could imagine on our own. You see so much in each of us, just like how you saw so much in Moses. And so, Lord, just pray your blessing on everyone here, that each of us would experience daily transformation to become more and more like your Son. More and more like that amazing spiritual butterfly effect. And we just pray this in your name.
Why don't we continue worshiping together, and as you feel led, come to
the Lord's table and remember all He has done for us. Our prayer team will be in the back of the room. We would love to pray for you, and especially if there's a promise that you need to hear and feel from God, we would love to pray for you over that.